Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And I have two special guests joining me by Skype. And, you know, as everything is in this world these days, people are joined by Skype and Zoom and all of the video conferencing platforms out there. So I have Julia Graham Witt, Master Gardener and owner of Two Green Thumbs, and Mur De Silva, the other green thumb in Two Green Thumbs. Hi to you both.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
It's out there. So I have Julia Graham Witt, Master Gardener and owner of Two Green Thumbs, and Mur De Silva, the other green thumb in Two Green Thumbs. In case you're not clear, a little bit later in the show. But with the coronavirus and people stuck at home and with concerns about food security and food resiliency, growing your own is now more popular than ever. And in addition to runs on TP and hand sanitizer and sanitary wipes, we now have a run on seeds and other plants, which is a pretty exciting thing for folks who have been gardening for a while, maybe a little bit frustrating as well. So we're going to talk about in this show how to get a victory garden started, all of the steps that you need to take to make this a reality, to grow your own food. And I'm so thankful to have our two guests. All right, Julia, you've done a little bit of research into the history of victory gardens. Briefly, what is a victory garden and where does that name come from?
So the victory gardens actually became popular in Canada in 1917 during World War I. There was food rationing and people were encouraged to grow some of their own food, not only to help themselves, but their neighbors. The U.S. really only started encouraging it during World War II and also because of food rationing. But it was also used to boost morale because people were, you know, kind of like we are now, trying to figure out some things that they could do to help themselves and their neighbors. By 1943, there were over 18 million victory gardens. They were not only in people's homes and yards, but they were also in public gardens. And Eleanor Roosevelt planted one on the White House grounds, which interestingly, the Department of Agriculture initially resisted because they feared it would hurt the food industry. And then they realized it would actually help.
All right. And now we also had Michelle Obama had a victory garden of sorts at the White House. I'm not sure if Melania is out there in her high heels or not, but I hope it's still there, or I hope it could be resurrected. All right. So a victory garden, it's just a little home garden for you to have some additional food, peas or lettuce or beans, what have you. And it's pretty easy. So after the end of today's show, hopefully you will feel brave enough, secure enough that you can go out into your own yard and till some soil and plant some seeds.
All right. You know, Tom, the other thing that is having a run now that I just recently learned is baby chicks, because people are wanting chickens for their backyard. I have a friend who wanted to put an order in and the hatcheries are sold out until May because people are now also panic buying chickens.
And if you go to the post office these days, too, you can hear the little baby chicks in the background because baby chicks, like bees, are sent through U.S. mail. And yes. They'll give you a call at the post office when your chicks are there to be picked up. And you swing down as fast as possible and you get these little peepers from the postal service. So how quaint.
Well, bees actually come via UPS, and I know this because I am getting a package of bees tomorrow, which I found out yesterday.
Oh, good. All right. Happy honeying to you. All right. So let's imagine a homeowner or maybe even a renter, and they want to start a garden. How should they choose the location of the garden? What should they be thinking about when planning to put together a garden?
Mur, would you like to address that?
Sure. I would think most about sun. If you're in the yard, I would think about what area is going to get the most sun. Most vegetables and flowering plants like a lot of sun. Of course, if you don't have a lot of sun, there are options. But if you are trying to find the best location, I would do that first.
6 hours is usually the minimum considered for most fruits and vegetables. And then, of course, the hot loving crops like tomatoes and corn want more than that. But if you can find a spot that gets at least 6 hours, you can definitely grow something.
All right. So pay attention to your yard. Watch where that sun is throughout the course of a day. And if you get 6 hours, that might be a good spot. And so then you need to prep the site. I think a lot of people probably have traditional grass lawns, you know, the dominant American yard. How can we get a garden out of a lawn? What are the steps to turn a lawn into a garden?
Well, it's pretty easy actually to turn a lawn into a garden. We've done this with a number of clients. You don't have to actually get a sod cutter or dig up the grass yourself. We have done that. It's not fun. But you can do what we call sheet mulching. And basically, you take cardboard, which Murr is very adept at dumpster diving for. We have a lot of local businesses that have large sheets of cardboard, like the furniture centers and appliance stores. We've learned that piecing together 8,000 Amazon boxes takes a lot more time than two king bed boxes from, say, furniture design or something. So it's good to cut the grass down to a low level if you can. That just helps. But you can just slap the cardboard right over the top, figure out a way to hold it down. We usually use landscaping pins, but you don't have to. Just make sure that you've covered all the grass, because grass will find a way to come back.
And so after you cover the grass, are you going to put soil on top of it, or is this just to kill the underlying grass and then you're going to go back later and dig it up?
Primarily, it's to kill the grass. What we usually do is we'll put a nice thick layer of mulch down, whether it's something you get at the side of, there's a turnout in 299 where the chip trucks dump their stuff, and there's a lot of other places in Humboldt where they do that. As long as you're not getting eucalyptus, because that actually has oils that can prevent the plants from growing, and you will be able to tell if it is eucalyptus by the smell. You can do shredded redwood mulch. You can do any sorts of things. You can also put a layer of soil down and then some mulch. The mulch just really helps, A, to preserve moisture, and B, to make sure that you don't have weeds coming up absolutely everywhere.
All right. And what's your preference? So I think a lot of people, when they think of a cute cottage backyard garden, they envision raised beds. Do you have a preference between raised beds or in the ground planting?
I like raised beds, but it does include a certain amount of cost, the lumber, unless you can find free lumber someplace. People who are inundated with gophers definitely like raised beds, because gophers will eat everything. And people are like, oh, plant onions around. I watched gophers take every single one of my onions 2 years ago. One by one, they had a nice little buffet. I was not a happy camper. So I like raised beds with hardware cloth at the bottom that keeps the gophers out. But again, there is a cost factor there unless you're really good at scrounging.
If you're making raised beds, do you have any recommendation on type of wood or where to source some of the material for a raised bed?
Rough cut cedar or redwood is really good. We can find that up here a lot better than other folks can. You know, most of the lumber yards have it, especially when spring comes around. They usually have a sale on that. So 2x12 is usually the size that I'll go with. It depends on your mobility. If you have mobility issues and it's hard to bend over, making the raised bed at least 2 feet tall is a good idea. I would not do it any more than 4 feet across, because you want to be able to reach from each side. But you can make it as long as you want. And Murr, I know that you were involved in building some raised beds recently with, I believe, some broken concrete or something.
Oh, yeah. That's another option. You can stack some concrete slabs and just make sure to build up the dirt behind them as you go. And if you treat it like bricks, where you're putting one slab over the seam of the bottom slabs, it'll build up and work just as well.
And, you know, broken concrete's often free. So look on Craigslist. We also have some concrete recyclers. Concrete is one of the most recycled materials on the planet, together with asphalt. And you can often, if you ask very nicely, they'll let you in and let you take some concrete from their concrete pile. I've had success with that. I won't name my concrete recycler, though, because it's my source. And you'll have to find your own.
Fine. Another option for raised beds, Tom, is Helen Nearing, who is a well-known in the organic gardening industry decades ago, uses straw bales, and there's straw bale raised beds. And you just get a whole bunch of straw bales, make a little bed, put the dirt in the center, and obviously it decomposes over time. So it's not a permanent structure, but it is a cheaper way to go.
Is this Helen Nearing of Helen and Scott Nearing?
Yes.
Yeah. Classic homesteaders. So check out some of their books. I think it's Living the Good Life or something like that.
Yes. Yes. I believe that's it.
Yeah. Homesteaders in Vermont, I believe.
I have the book in my bookcase somewhere.
Yeah. It's a classic, though. If you go into any bookstore, they probably should have a couple old copies from the 70s, all nicely dog-eared. All right. So a lot of folks come up here to Humboldt County from SoCal. They come up here from SoCal. And they may have kind of unrealistic expectations of what works in our colder, kind of more moist summers. So what does particularly well in Humboldt County?
Well, pretty much all leafy greens, lettuces, kales, chard, garlic does excellent. You can grow onions. Basically, the things that are really hard to grow here on the coast, at least, would be slicer tomatoes. So if you want those Brandywines, unless you have some sort of little hothouse or greenhouse, just get it at farmer's market. You're going to be very disappointed. Cherry tomatoes actually do okay here on the coast. A popular one is Sun Gold or Sweet Million. Corn, you can grow here. You need to get a short season. Terry Kramer has a list of stuff that she puts at the Humboldt Botanical Garden. She's their head gardener. So if you get a short season, and I know several of the vendors at farmers market who do plants, sell them. So just talk to your local vendor and they can let you know what is a shorter season corn and or tomato.
And just as a warning, because I've suffered this from my own personal experience, just because it's on sale at a nursery doesn't mean that it can grow here. So when you see your Valencia oranges or, you know, what else? I think I've even seen
pomegranate.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, I'd love to be able to grow pomegranates, but you might be able to grow the plant, but it will never produce fruit up here. So yeah, so be aware that nurseries may not, just because it's at a nursery doesn't mean that it's an okay plant to plant.
This is true. And part of the reason why they do that is because, of course, they get people from inland. So even Blue Lake and especially Willow Creek, you can grow some of those plants there. But definitely talk to your fellow nursery person and ask them, hey, I live on F Street in Eureka. Do you think that this beautiful avocado tree will give me avocados next year? You will be disappointed if you plant it.
All right. So do you have any recommendations on places to get seeds or starts? And actually, let's talk about the difference between seeds and starts, because those are two entirely different ways that you could go about getting your garden established. Do you have pros and cons for seeds versus starts?
Well, yeah, for seeds, you can get a lot more for your money, but it also takes time and having, you know, little pots and dirt to get them started. You can buy a pack of lettuce seeds for, let's say, $2.79, and you can get 100 lettuce starts out of that. For people who don't have the time or inclination or aren't quite sure how to grow gardens, buying starts, especially if you have a small space, is a really good way to go. And we do have quite a few excellent plant nursery people here in Humboldt County that not only sell their starts at farmers market, but at the local nurseries. And Mer, I know that you have collected seeds and have also done starts. Do you have a preference?
Seeds are fun if you have the time and patience for it. You know, I've had some success and then I've also had some failures. So it's nice to have starts as a backup if, you know, you started 30 Billy Button seeds, for instance. One of them took. Seeds are more finicky. I know with some flowers, they need light germination. They like to be tray fed instead of the water being poured over the top. And if you don't have the patience to research each individual seedling, you might have more trouble. So I do a little bit of both.
And for seed location, the Humboldt Permaculture Guild for many years has done their seed and scion exchange. Unfortunately, the coronavirus, which is causing us to record this remotely, also caused them to cancel their event this year, but they have an alternative seed delivery mechanism. Mer, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so they actually receive a huge donation of seeds that they bring with them to the seed exchange. And that didn't change this year. They still have a whole bunch of seeds. Since they're not going to be hosting the seed exchange, Scion Exchange as well, they're going to be delivering them to little free pantries, which were placed around Eureka and surrounding areas by the Cooperation Humboldt. And if you want to find out where those are located, you can actually go to cooperationhumboldt.com/LFP for Little Free Pantry. And they have a map to show their locations. There's also going to be a bunch of seeds taken to the Neyland Farm Stand for people to pick up as well.
Yeah, the Neyland Glen Farm Stand has a lot of stuff that local people have.
All right. Other favorite locations for seeds and starts in the county? I know, Julia, before this show, we were talking about our favorite nurseries in the county.
All of the nurseries have seeds and starts. I would say the ones that have a lot more variety up here in Noham would be Miller Farms and Pearson's. Mad River Gardens is a sweet little nursery. They have a smaller selection of stock. And I know there's a nursery over in Cutton, but I don't tend to go there that much, so I can't really speak to that. But absolutely. And we were there, Murr and I, at Miller Farms the day before we knew that the shelter-in-place order was going into effect. So we decided to stop and get a few things. And everybody and their gardening mother was there at Miller Farms. And all of the 6 packs of lettuce and basically any of the veggies were pretty much wiped out. And then I contributed to wiping out a lot of their seed stock because I made up little bags of seeds to deliver to gardening friends.
And Miller Farms, Pearson's, they're both considered essential businesses. So they are still open during the shelter in place order. So take all your necessary precautions that you need. Maintain your social distance. But these places are still open in case you need to get some more seeds, some starts, some soil amendments or some soil. Don't think that you will have to outwait the virus to get your garden started.
That's correct. And both of them have definitely implemented more measures since the shelter in place went into effect. And I will say that if you want bulk materials, if you have the money to do so, it's cheaper to buy in bulk for soil. And both Powell's and West Green are the places we tend to utilize. There may be others, but those are the ones that we tend to go to.
All right. Yeah. So if you need to fill your raised bed, it makes so much more sense to buy bulk soil than to buy bagged soil. Plus, you know, this is the Eco News Report. It's the eco thing to do to buy in bulk, right? We do it at the co-op. We also do it with our soil. So you can save all of those plastic bags that the soil is otherwise contained in. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I have Julia Graham Witt, Master Gardener and owner of Two Green Thumbs, and Murr De Silva, the other green thumb in Two Green Thumbs. All right, so we've got our plants. We've got our area that we are going to plant. What else do we need besides seeds and soil?
Well, as we most of us know here in Humboldt, one of our favorite garden critters is slugs. So you want to make sure you have some sort of prevention method for slugs. I use Sluggo. I get the gigantic canisters from Costco because it's larger and it's a little bit cheaper. Not everybody can buy a thing of Sluggo. I have also used crushed eggshells, and Murr also recently did that with some of her plants, made an entire moat of eggshells around the tender plants because you can plant something and it'll be toast the next day if you don't do something for the slugs.
I've also heard that they don't like the taste of coffee grounds, so my moat is circles of crushed eggshell and coffee grounds, and right now the tender plant that I'm trying to protect has 3 happy leaves out of 7, which I call a success.
Definitely. So yeah, you need to think about, you know, first of all, sunlight, location. Is your dog going to run through the area? That also is something to take in consideration. Is your cat going to use it as a litter box? Also a consideration for those who let their cats out. Otherwise, just pick a nice planting spot. Read the information on either the tag or on the seed packet. It'll tell you what the plant's like. A lot of people tend to space things too close together. And with some things it's okay, like carrots or radishes, you can thin those out. But other plants, read the tag. If it says likes to be planted, you know, it'll get 4 to 6 feet wide. Don't plant it 2 inches apart from its little friend next to you. Otherwise, you're going to be yanking one out in another month or so.
And I think that that's been the lesson that's been hardest for me to learn. And I need to learn it every single year is, you know, trust that these plants are going to grow, because you will put these little tiny things into the ground and you can't expect that they're ever going to get very big. But lo and behold, they will grow to the size that the tag says. And so if you cram them all together, you're going to cause them to compete against each other, stress the plants. And you're just going to have a mess on your hands. You're going to have to go through and get rid of some of your carefully planted seeds or starts. So even if it feels like it's kind of a luxurious amount of space that you're giving each plant, trust your directions.
Yes, definitely.
Have you ever tried the stale beer method for slugs and snails?
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, I have. I'm glad you asked. My slugs prefer natural ice. I think you can get a 12-pack for $3 or something. I like drinking beer personally. I wouldn't go near that with a 10-foot pole. But Cheap beer is totally fine. You can take a saucer, anything, have it at ground level, and the slugs will crawl in and die a happy death. The only problem that I had was about, I don't know, 9 or 10 years ago, the raccoons decided to have a party and they drained every single saucer of beer. I'm like, great, thanks. So it does work, but you have to watch out for the other critters you have in your yard.
I'm intimidated enough by raccoons. I don't need drunk raccoons to deal with in my yard. All right. How do I know if I'm watering enough?
That is a good question. It depends on the plant. People do tend to overwater rather than underwater. Some things don't like to be watered that often. For example, herbs, once they're established, you really don't have to water them that much at all. And I'm talking about the woody stemmed ones like rosemary, lavender, that sort of thing. I think the rule is, and I should have looked it up before I got on this call, is if you stick your finger down an inch into the soil and it's still damp, you're fine. But basically, the general rule is about an inch of rain per week. And that's whether it's sprinkling or you using your watering can or whatever. But you do want to keep them relatively moist, but you don't want to drown them.
And as your garden becomes more and more complicated, you can always put in your own water storage systems. It is remarkable how much water flows off of our roofs and can be captured into barrels every year. So you know, if you're getting concerned about your water bill, there you go.
Yes.
You can also make sure to do some healthy mulching too, which will help keep the soil a little bit more moist and retain your water. I have found that any area that has just bare soil will dry out the quickest.
Yes. Yeah. Mulch is really helpful, not only for suppression of weeds, but to retain moisture. And a really nice thick layer of mulch is important, but don't put it right up against the stem of the plant because it can actually cause rot.
Do you have a favorite mulch for vegetables?
You know, it depends. I usually use straw. Not hay. Do not use hay. You will be very sad if you use hay. Straw is great. It breaks down and it also, you know, feeds the plants eventually. You do have to replace it often. But I use straw for my garlic beds and my onion beds and many other things.
Straw versus hay. So hay has the seed head still.
Yes.
And so straw is just the stem of the grass.
Yes.
So yeah, you don't want to accidentally have an alfalfa bed in the future. So
I had a lovely oat bed last year because somebody gave me a bale that they said was straw and I put it out and I thought, this kind of looks like there's seeds in here and boy were there ever.
Oh goodness. So not everyone is lucky enough to have a backyard or an area that they can turn into a little garden. But thankfully, we can still do container gardens for those of us who have apartments or little decks that we want to plant. Do you have favorite plants for a container garden?
You know, definitely look at the label again. You're not going to want to put a bunch of tomatoes in a single container. You can grow a tomato plant in a pot, but it needs to be pretty good sized. So look at the instructions on the plant tag or on the seed packet. I have seen people grow garlic in pots. It prefers to be in the ground, but you can definitely do that. Just, you know, space it apart like you would for anything else. Lettuces, kales, those are all great. You can even do carrots, as long as the pot is deep enough. Carrots obviously have a very long taproot, so you want a pot that's at least 2 feet tall.
But the world is your oyster. Okay. So you don't just have to grow vegetables. You can also grow flowers and other things for pollinators. I know that there has been a lot of interest locally in establishing pollinator-friendly gardens. So, Mer, do you have any recommendations in creating a pollinator garden?
Luckily, in Humboldt, it's not hard to make a pollinator garden. As a person who came up from Southern California, it's pretty amazing how little watering, once a lot of pollinator-friendly plants are established, you need. I really love salvias, and so do the bees and hoverflies and other pollinator butterflies. They often come around verbenas, oregano, and flowered parsley. Like I have found that I've just been sticking any fun plant that has a little bee label on it from the nurseries in the ground, watering it to get established, and then letting it go wild, and they come.
With the herbs, a lot of people cut them back. Absolutely let them flower, because especially in the fall, that's when a lot of forage for the bees, and not only honeybees, but native bees, has gone away. And so letting them bloom, you will just find unbelievable numbers of different bees on your plants if you let the oregano and the sage and all of those go to flower.
Yeah, that brings up a good point. If you want to support local pollinators, it's good to keep in mind what a lot of gardeners call seasonal interest, which just means that you're providing a nectar source for pollinators all year round. And there are plants that do better blooming in what's called a dearth, or when there isn't a whole lot of plants flowering, such as sedum. Autumn joy is a good one. The bees just go crazy for that. Scabiosa actually, for me, bloomed almost all through the winter. Dahlias, a lot of times if you get the bulbs going later, they'll keep blooming up until it gets pretty cold, November time. At least that was the experience I had in my garden. And so trying to think about how to keep them having resources all throughout our year, especially since we tend to have milder winters in our area.
Yeah, and it's really nice to interplant flowers with your vegetables. You don't have to just have a section of vegetables and then flowers over here. A lot of, you know, mingling them together, and then it will draw the pollinators to the flowers, and then they will also pollinate your plants, like if you have a little pumpkin plant or something like that.
It's also a good way to get that cottage garden aesthetic.
I just want to bring up bee condos.
Oh, okay.
Mer, bring up bee condos for me.
Okay, so another way. So I actually can speak as experience. Being a beekeeper is really, really tough stuff. You got to have the know-how, do a lot of research. You got to have the equipment. And there are many different things that could potentially go wrong. So if you're like me and keeping bees is a lot more intense than maybe what you're prepared for, you can still support local native bees, which could definitely use your help by creating what's called bee hotels or bee condos or Airbnbs.
No.
So it depends on what kind of bugs you're trying to attract, how you want to make that. Typically, what people will do is grab a chunk of wood and drill holes in it, and the holes should be of a diameter that will accommodate what bees would be looking for out in the wild. And I think that's about 1/8 of an inch or 1/16 of an inch holes. I'm talking diameter. You can also pile in stacks of a straw, leaf debris, and hold it all into like a kind of a hardware cloth casing. And that will attract beneficial insects in general, because in order to have a garden that is really thriving and has pollinators, you want to accommodate a lot of local insects, not just maybe a leaf cutter bee, for instance.
So if you don't have a resource to a garden, I know that there are other places that you can go and plant. Mer, can you tell us a little bit about where else you could garden if you don't have one in your own backyard?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm all for indoor, like kitchen windowsill gardens. I think there's a lot of potential there. You can grow microgreens. You can do your herb gardens, just growing out of like cans with holes punched in the bottom, a shoe. You can get really creative and you'll be surprised what plants will tolerate. If you don't want to do an indoor garden, I would recommend looking into some community gardens. And we do have a lot in our area. There is the Open Door Community Wellness Gardens. And if you want to learn more about what they do, you can go to, you can email garden@opendoorhealth.com. Or you can call 269-7073, extension 3179. They have a lot of activities for volunteers. Their point person, RG, is bilingual, so she's happy to help you. There's also the North Coast Community Garden Collaborative, and that has, they have a Facebook page that you can go on to get more information about what they're up to, in addition to Cooperation Humboldt, who has a lot of volunteer opportunity, and they also have a Facebook page. We are kind of limited in the way we can coordinate volunteers during the shelter in place, but they still have opportunities out there for gardening as an individual on a community plot.
All right. And let's end the show with some resources if folks want to learn more. I've always found Eddie Tanner's The Humboldt Kitchen Gardener to be a fantastic local resource about what to plant and when. Other recommendations?
Yeah, if people don't know when to plant things, the Farmer's Almanac has a really good website. It will not only tell you your zone, which if you don't know what that is, you can look it up, but it will tell you when the best time is to plant things for your zone. And you can find that at www.almanac.com/gardening/planting-calendar. You can just Google Farmer's Almanac calendar and you should be able to find it, but that's a very helpful resource.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Julia and Murr, for joining the Eco News Report. Also, if you want to have a garden and you don't want to do all the work, you can call up Two Green Thumbs and Julia and Murr can come out there and help you. Also, if you just want to get started and you want to have some help, they're around. So check out Two Green Thumbs. Thank you so much, Julia and Murr, for joining the Eco News.
Thanks, Tom.
This has been another issue of the Eco News Report. Join us on This Time and Channel next week for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.